Eddie, the Junior Year. Chapter 7. Summer Break, Part 2. Not a week seems to go by that Eddie's mother, Nina, and Mark's mother, Mariana, doesn't run into Chucky's mother at the local farmer's market. Nina and Mariana always shop when the new shipments arrive, always getting the prime fresh food. They both make 2 or 3 trips per week to the farmer's market to assure that the food they serve is always fresh. Nina and Mariana have both been making fresh pizza since their sons, after meeting their girls, seem to eat a lot more pizza than before. Nina always mentions to Mariana the good deals she finds, and Mariana returns the favor. Nina and Mariana also have their own gardens at home, and exchange items with each other throughout the year. Whenever they meet, they always talk briefly about Eddie and Mark and what they have been up to. Today, Nina tells Mariana that Eddie finally got his car running that he has been working on for the last year. Mariana mentions that Mark is looking for a truck so that he can work alongside his father when he graduates. It seems that Chucky's mother, Catherine Black, seems to know Nina's and Mariana's shopping schedules very well, and goes out of her way to harass them. Mrs. Black walks up, adding a new twist to her usual sarcastic introduction, "Well, well, well, if it isn't Nina Svoboda and Mariana Boganskaya." Correcting Catherine, Mariana comments, "That's Mariana Svoboda and Nina Boganskaya. I hope you're not getting dementia or something." Nina laughs and replies, "And if it isn't the Catherine Black, the mother of the little jailbird Chucky." Nina always refers to Mrs. Black as the Catherine Black, as if she is an inanimate object. Nina asks, "So, how is your little Chucky doing? Is he still in jail, or have they let him out?" Catherine replies, "Just so you know, Charles is not in jail. He's doing very well." Nina sarcastically replies, "Oh, that's right. That was silly of me to forget. Chucky is taking gym class this summer because he failed it. And he's cleaning the trash off the streets on the weekends because he pulled on a girl's underwear." Mariana adds that will keep the poor little Chucky off the streets. Catherine belligerently mentions, "Well, if it wasn't for Eddie and Mark, Charles would not have so many problems." Nina tells Catherine, "Well, I wouldn't blame it all on Eddie and Mark. I hear the Chucky is getting beaten up by the girls now." Nina has had enough of Catherine. Nina takes a look at Catherine's shopping cart, seeing it filled with unhealthy items. Pretending to have deep concern regarding Chucky's health, Nina informs Catherine, "You should feed the little Chucky some more of that bacon you have there so he can build up his muscles. Oh, and you should feed him fried bologna sandwiches. Make sure you put it on white bread. That will make your little Chucky big and strong, so he can throw the shot put. And then, he won't fail gym class next year." Catherine yells out, "There is nothing wrong with Charles. Your sons just keep bullying him day after day. They are the reason he failed gym class. It's actually Chucky who's the bully, but, for some reason, Catherine, a bully herself, cannot see that. And Mr. Fraser's decision to fail Chucky in gym class had absolutely nothing to do with Eddie or Mark." Mrs. Black then adds, "And don't think that I don't know that Eddie and Mark did everything they could to keep Charles off the track team last year." Mariana tells Catherine, "That's right. They get the girls to beat up the Chucky now, so he can't try out for the team. The guys just put the girls up to it. And if it looks like the Chucky is winning, the guys step in and break it up." Catherine exclaims, "I knew it. I just knew Eddie and Mark were behind that." Mariana tells Nina, "Wow. She's finally figured it out. She's smarter than she looks." Mariana tells Catherine, "You should hear some of the plans Mark has made for harassing Chucky next year. He has it all figured out." Catherine tells Nina and Mariana, "I've heard enough. I'm taking this to the principal next year. You just watch." Mariana sighs and replies, "I can't wait." It's not hard to see how Mark got his sense of humor. Mariana just took care of Catherine in the same manner that Mark takes care of McCutcheon before a race. Catherine moves on, feeling once again like she's been run over by a truck, just conversing with Nina and Mariana. Nina and Mariana have a good laugh and go on their way again. Nina and Mariana will meet up again in a few days, hopefully not seeing Catherine anytime soon. Midsummer arrives, so Kathy and Paula pre-register for their classes over at the university. Being on scholarship, they get to register early, guaranteeing themselves the classes of their choice. Students on athletic scholarship are allowed to register before the other students so they can get classes that do not interfere with their practice sessions. But registration for a first semester freshman could be a little frustrating, so they go to the school together to register. Although Kathy and Paula graduated summa cum laude, things like administrative paperwork, applying for a learner's permit, and buying cars stress them out. Being able to run 100 yards in about 10 seconds is easier than wrestling with paperwork for Kathy and Paula. Since they are in the same major, they plan to register for some of the same classes. Many of their classes are core classes, such as English, history, math, and other stuff all the students have to get out of the way. Getting in the core classes together should be easy enough. Kathy and Paula each arrive in their own car at the campus and meet Barbara in the gym where registration is being held. Before they begin registration, they all go outside and Barbara gets her first look at Paula's Jeep CJ. Seeing the CJ, Barbara now wants one, but who wouldn't? Being able to drive around with the top down is appealing to anyone who likes the outdoors. Barbara is impressed with the CJ and tells Paula that she did well in getting it. Kathy decides she wants to take classes that coincide with the high school hours so she can spend more time with Eddie. Hearing Kathy's idea, Paula also decides to do the same. Barbara tells them that it would be easy to do. Kathy and Paula have to choose classes held at or after 10 a.m., since their two-hour track practice begins at 7 a.m. There really isn't a problem getting the classes they want. The problem is getting whom you want, as in the professor teaching the class. No one wants a professor who reads the textbook to the class, or would rather be somewhere else. Some professors make the classes unnecessarily difficult, and students try to avoid them. Other professors make the class very interesting, making it difficult to get into their class. Kathy and Paula get their registration forms, and fortunately for first semester freshmen, the process is actually quite easy. You just register for a specific section in your major, and the classes are bundled together. Kathy and Paula pick the same section that begins in mid-morning, but Barbara notices a problem. The section they picked has Dr. Hutchinson for English class. Barbara tells them to delete that particular class and replace it with the class taught by Dr. Thompson. They make the change and get in line to turn in their forms. Kathy asks Barbara, "So, what's wrong with Dr. Hutchinson?" Barbara explains, "Well, the first thing he will do is ask the class, 'Does anyone here know how to sharpen a pencil?' If anyone dares answer him, he will make the person stand up in front of the class and demonstrate how to sharpen a pencil. Then, he'll find some little tiny flaw in the way it was done and tell the class that whoever it was doesn't know how to sharpen a pencil. Then he'll ask the class if anyone else knows how to sharpen a pencil. No one will dare answer. Then, he'll tell the class, 'What? No one here knows how to sharpen a pencil. How did all of you ever get into this university?' Kathy replies, 'Wow. We definitely don't want that guy.' Barbara continues and tells them it doesn't stop there. He'll make you do these stupid assignments, like writing out the instructions for tying your shoes. Oh, and he takes attendance every day." Paula exclaims, "Geesh. I'm glad you warned us about him." Kathy's turn in line comes, and she hands the administrator her paperwork. The administrator gives Kathy an unusual look. Kathy's initial impression is that she may have done something wrong in filling out the forms. The administrator asks, "Are you related to Dr. Karakova?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. He's my dad." The administrator smiles and replies, "I figured you must be related. There's not a whole lot of people with your last name." The administrator pulls a bunch of cards out of a box, adds them to Kathy's paperwork, and adds it to the stack. She hands Kathy a copy of her schedule and tells her, "Okay, you're all set." Kathy replies, "Wow. That was really easy." Paula is next, and the process moves along just as easily. While Paula is registering for her classes, Barbara tells Kathy, "One good thing about college is you have a lot of free time. You'll be in class about 20 hours a week." Kathy looks at her schedule and replies, "Wow. I can see that. 5 hours on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 hours on Tuesday, and 1 hour on Thursday." Barbara asks, "So, what are you going to do on Thursdays?" Kathy replies, "Workout and homework, I guess." Barbara tells Kathy, "And you don't have to worry. We don't have a Mr. Crumb around here to make your life miserable." Kathy suddenly tells Barbara, "I know exactly what I'll do. I'll go to the high school and throw discuses at Mr. Crumb on Thursdays." Barbara tells Kathy, "I heard about what you said during graduation. That was so good. I wish I was there to see that." Kathy, who said quite a lot during graduation, asks, "What did I say?" Barbara reminds Kathy about Mr. Crumb being in the red zone during graduation. Kathy replies, "Oh, yeah. The final score is in, and I won." After registering, Paula joins Kathy and Barbara. When Barbara brought up graduation, it reminded Kathy of something new that she learned. Kathy tells Barbara, "Oh, and do I have some news for you?" Barbara replies, "Uh-oh. This is going to be good. I know you, girl." Kathy, sounding like the queen of gossip, tells Barbara, "I found out how Mr. Zunday gets away with everything and how he does whatever he wants to do." Paula mentions, "Yeah, this is good. It couldn't get any better." Kathy tells Barbara, "Get this. Dr. Noreen Brooks, the superintendent of schools, is Mr. Zunday's cousin." Barbara exclaims, "No. You've got to be kidding me, girl." Paula replies, "Seriously. He is." Kathy adds, "And now, Eddie, Mark, and everyone else knows it. So, next year, no one is going to put up with Mr. Crumb's bullshit." Barbara mentions, "This is really going to get interesting. And, best of all, Barbara, Kathy, and Paula will all be there to see it. During the track season, they all will be in turns working with the team again, as they were when Eddie and the rest of the tribe were freshmen." Barbara then tells them, "The only other thing you have to do is to get your parking permit. Oh, and you'll also get a faculty parking permit for the high school, since you'll be an intern." Paula mentions, "I would have never thought of that." Kathy, almost predicting the future, says that old Crumb will have a shit fit when he sees us parked in the faculty lot. They all go over and get their parking stickers together. Paula mentions, "I don't think I'll need a parking sticker. The beach patrol should be able to park wherever they want." Kathy tells her, "You might get away with that if it wasn't for your beach girl plate on the front." Barbara points out to Paula, "At this school, it's not going to take long for everyone to recognize your Jeep. It's really going to stand out." Paula replies, "Good. It won't get stolen then." They get in line for their parking stickers, which is the easiest thing they've done all day. Registration went easier than Kathy and Paula ever expected. Life will certainly get simpler for them. Mr. Crumb made their senior year, which was supposed to be fun, as difficult as possible. In college, there are no hall monitors, no dress code, no detentions, and no Mr. Crumb around to try to suspend you if you are wearing the wrong type of shirt. Now, they can leave campus whenever they want, eat whenever they want, go to the gym between classes, and have a life. Best of all, today, they actually had fun registering together. Later that week, one day after work, Paula takes a trip to the Jeepyard to find a new hood. She goes by herself, since Mark and Eddie are working. She finds the Jeepyard, which appears exactly as Angelo described. There are more than 100 Jeeps in the yard in various stages of disassembly. Two large metal buildings, with who knows what in them, house even more parts. Paula drives up, seeing that the place is mostly deserted. Most of the Jeeps she sees in the back appear to have most of the parts removed. Some of them are not even recognizable as Jeeps. Paula walks inside one of the buildings, and the owner, Rocky, walks up and asks, "What can I help you with today?" Paula tells Rocky, "Angelo sent me here. My CJ needs a new hood." Rocky tells Paula, "Let me take a look at it." They walk outside, and Rocky takes a look. Rocky asks Paula, "Hailstorm?" Paula replies, "Yeah." Rocky tells Paula, "Come inside, and let's see what we got." On the way in, Rocky asks, "How do you know Angelo?" Paula explains, "I went to Northside, and some of my friends know him." Rocky tells Paula, "Angelo is a nice guy, and probably the best mechanic around. You won't find a better mechanic anywhere." Paula was certainly glad to hear that. Rocky takes Paula to the back of the building, where the CJ hoods are all lined up, sorted by year. Rocky tells Paula, "Hailstorms. That's why all the hoods and fenders are in here, and not out in the yard." Rocky looks through his collection, and gives Paula some good news, telling her, "You're in luck. I actually have one in your color." He takes it out and shows it to Paula. Paula looks it over, and sees that the hood is in much better shape than hers, and has no dings. She asks how much it is, and Rocky gives her the price. Paula tells him, "I'll take it." Paula pays Rocky for the hood, as Rocky instructs his employee to bring the hood up front. Rocky and his employee load the hood into Paula's back seat, making sure it is tied down well. Rocky instructs Paula, "Take the side streets back, and don't get on the parkways. Try to drive slow. When you get the old one off, bring it by if you want. I'll give you a few bucks for it. And if you need any other parts, stop by." Rocky doesn't talk a whole lot, but he delivers. Paula thanks Rocky and drives off. Paula takes the hood over to Vinny's, so she can have him paint a yellow sun on the hood. She drives up and walks into the office. Vinny yells out, "Hey. It's the Jeep girl." Paula tells him, "Yeah. That would be me. Thank you so much for the plate on the front. That was really nice of you. Everyone loves it." Vinny tells her, "I'm glad you like it." Paula tells Vinny, "You really didn't have to do that, you know." Vinny tells Paula, "I know, but you're Italian. You get the red carpet treatment around here." Vinny asks, "So, what can I do for you today?" Paula tells him, "I bought a new hood. Can you paint a sun on it for me?" Vinny replies, "Sure. No problem." Paula thinks to herself that this is really getting almost too easy. Vinny asks, "Is the hood here?" Paula tells him, "Yeah, it's outside." Vinny goes outside with Paula and sees the hood in the back of the Jeep. Vinny tells her, "Oh good. It's not on your Jeep yet. That makes it easier." Vinny tells Paula, "I'll be right back." Vinny goes into the shop and gets Anthony. Vinny tells Anthony, "Hey, get the Jeep girl's hood out of her Jeep and put it back in the shop." Anthony unloads the hood and brings it into the shop while Vinny talks with Paula. Vinny asks Paula, "What do you want the sun to look like?" Paula tells Vinny, "I want a sun with rays coming out of it. Like really deep yellow in the center and lighter yellow rays, like a combination of the two, if you know what I mean." Vinny replies, "Got it. We can do that. How big?" Paula replies, "As big as you can get it without having it wrap around to the sides of the hood." They go into the office, and Vinnie asks Paula to draw a rough picture of what she wants. Paula draws a sun, with curvy rays coming out of it, in a wavy pattern. Vinnie tells her the price, and she tells him to go ahead with it. Vinnie tells her that he will have the work done in a week. Paula asks, "Isn't there any paperwork?" Vinnie tells her, "No. You're the Jeep girl. I know you." Paula is quite amazed that, when working with the right people, everything goes very smoothly. Angelo was right. There is no reason to be stressed. Buying the hood was about as easy as it could be. Getting the sun painted on the hood was equally as easy. It's just like working with Mr. Zunday, where everything goes smoothly. Mr. Zunday plows through Mr. Crumb's roadblocks and obstacles like a runaway train, leaving a trail of carnage that has Mr. Zunday's signature on it. The right people in any industry get things done quickly, avoiding any red tape. The next weekend, Kathy decides that she wants to go to a beach somewhere. She asks Eddie, "Do you think the portal will take us to like a beach, say, like somewhere if we don't know exactly where?" Eddie replies, "I don't know. We've never tried it." Kathy tells him, "I was looking at a map, and there are these islands off the Georgia and Florida coast. I wonder if any of them have a portal." Eddie jokes around and tells her, "Maybe the portal will make a really loud laughing sound if it doesn't understand." Kathy laughs and replies, "Oh, it will not." Kathy shows Eddie a map and asks, "How about Amelia Island? It looks like it's a nice place. And they have things to do, like boat rides and shops." Eddie replies, "Okay. Let's go." Kathy mentions, "I wonder if Paula and Mark want to go." Eddie suggests, "We can call and ask." Kathy calls Paula and asks if they want to go. Paula, answering for both her and Mark, replies, "Yeah. We're definitely going. Mark has been working way too much. He needs some fun." Kathy asks Paula, "How is it that Mark is working so much this summer?" Paula explains, "He feels like he's falling behind. He needs a truck, so he has to make some money before school starts." They all decide to go to Amelia Island, and everyone gets their stuff together. Organizing the trip took Kathy and Paula only a few minutes. Even they can make something seem ridiculously simple if they put their mind to it. They all meet at the portal this time, bringing money, water, and Gatorade, but no food. They figure they'd have lunch at one of the local eateries. Kathy also brings a map of the area, hoping that her map will still be reasonably accurate in the future. Kathy suggests, "How about 30 years in the future?" Paula replies, "It's as good a time as any." Mark mentions, "If we go in our time and find someone we know, there could be trouble." Eddie remarks, "That's a good point. I never thought of that." They all walk into the portal with their bicycles, and Kathy raises her right arm and says, "Amelia Island, 30 years from now." They arrive in the middle of a park, with little indication of exactly where they are or where they should go. Kathy tells everyone, "Okay, we're going to need a landmark for this one. Everything around here looks the same." Mark locates two trees next to each other, where one has fallen into another. Kathy tells everyone to take a good look. Eddie mentions, "The two trees are across the road from the water." They then head in the direction that appears to lead to the exit. When they get to the main road, Eddie sees a sign that says Fort Clinch State Park. They are now confident they can find their way back. Now knowing where she is, Kathy checks her map and, from the looks of things, all the action is to the right. About a mile and a half down the road, they find a village lined with shops and restaurants. Kathy exclaims, "This is what I was hoping for." At the very end of the road, they find a marina and a place that does boat tours of the area. They all decide to take the boat tour around the island before they eat lunch. They buy their tickets and ask the attendant where a good place to lock their bicycles would be. The attendant tells them to lock them to the fence, and that she'll watch them. She assures them that their bicycles won't get stolen. They walk around a bit, picking up brochures for the local attractions. The boat begins to board, so they get in line. Kathy tells Eddie, "This is going to be so much fun." They find a seat, and the captain goes over a few things before they leave, like where the life preservers are. The captain reassures the 50 passengers that he has driven a boat once before. He also mentions that the boat didn't sink, so there is no need to worry. They quickly find out that the captain has a good sense of humor. The boat leaves the dock, and the morning cruise is underway. On their way out, they pass a few shrimping vessels on the water. The captain tells the passengers that the shrimp served in many of the restaurants on the island is caught the same day it's served. As they head out, the captain points out a dolphin on the port side of the boat. Everyone takes a look, and the dolphin actually follows the boat for a while. Paula tells Kathy, "This is a really great place to come to." Eddie mentions, "This is the first time that I've ever been on a boat." They all then realize that this is the first time any of them have ever been on a boat. The captain points out Fort Clinch and explains that it was originally built by the Spanish in 1736. He also explains the history of the fort. The captain mentions that the United States seized the fort in 1847 and how it was used in various wars. Kathy mentions, "Wow, this is way better than history class. You actually get to see the history, instead of reading it in a book." Eddie agrees and states, "It's a whole lot better than Mr. O'Brien's class." They enter St. Mary's River, and the captain points out a naval facility in the water that demagnetizes submarines. The captain mentions that the Russians can track a submarine if it has a magnetic signature, so submarines must be periodically demagnetized. He also points out that there is a satellite over the Earth that is watching the area, and that the officials in Washington, D.C. can see the boat right now. The captain also tells everyone that, if there were a quarter on the deck of the ship, the folks in Washington, D.C. can tell whether it's heads or tails. He then tells the passengers to wave to everyone in Washington, D.C. Kathy remarks, "Wow, things have come a long way." Eddie comments, "Yeah, and we're not supposed to be here right now. And they are seeing us on the satellite." Mark points out, "We could be waving to some of our track buddies. They'd probably recognize us." Kathy then comes to an interesting realization. She mentions, "What happens if Paul Mahoney cleaned himself up, and is monitoring the satellite, and sees the four of us together? That would be a trip right back into the sanitarium." Everyone laughs, as Mark mentions, if he saw us, he'd never get out of the sanitarium again. Mark then comments, "Maybe McCrutchen is watching us." They come to the realization that the portal is better technology than the government can ever dream of. Their trip continues around the island. They also pass by Cumberland Island and see the wild horses that inhabit the island. They learn that the island is, for the most part, preserved in its natural state. The captain gives them a history of the island and tells them that only a few hundred people are allowed on the island on any given day. On the trip back to the marina, they sit back and relax and enjoy the scenery. Kathy thumbs through a travel brochure that she picked up while they were waiting for the boat and found what she thinks will be the perfect place for lunch and begins to mention it to the group. The captain tells Kathy, "You, in the French blue shirt. You look way too relaxed. Come up here." Kathy is wondering why she got singled out. After all, everyone else looks just as relaxed as she does. Kathy walks up to the helm, and the captain tells her to pilot the ship as he continues to give his discussion about the area's attractions and points of interest. Kathy is now at the wheel, with the captain standing next to her. As they approach the river, the captain tells Kathy to slowly turn to the right. The captain assures Kathy that she is doing well. The captain tells the passengers that they have just crossed from Georgia back into Florida, and informs everyone about a war that they may not have heard about. The captain tells everyone, back about 75 years ago, there was a war in the region that not a lot of people are aware of. It was called the Georgia-Florida War. Paula mentions to Eddie and Mark, "I've never heard about it." Mark replies, "Me either." The captain continues, "The residents of Georgia were throwing hand grenades over the border. The residents of Florida were pulling out the pins and throwing them back." Most of the passengers laugh at the captain's joke. Some of the passengers don't get it, perhaps because they do not know how a hand grenade works. As they approach the dock, the captain tells everyone to give Kathy a hand. Everyone claps for the first mate, who brought them all back safely. Kathy takes her seat again with Eddie. The captain docks the boat and thanks all of the passengers for joining him. Everyone agrees that the two-hour boat ride was awesome. As they disembark, Kathy asks the captain, "Did I really look that relaxed?" The captain replies, "Yeah, you did. But you looked like the happiest and most cheerful person on the boat, so I picked you." Kathy tells him, "Thank you so much. Driving the boat really made my day." Kathy and the rest leave the boat, as the captain tells them to come back again someday. While they are unlocking their bicycles, Eddie asks Kathy, "You mentioned that you found a good place to eat. Where was that?" Kathy replies, "Oh yeah. That's right. I was going to ask you guys, but then I got to drive the boat." Eddie asks, "Well?" Kathy replies, "It's on 7th Street. I guess it's a few blocks away." Eddie, prying for information, asks, "Does the restaurant have a name?" Kathy replies, "All restaurants have names. And they have food there too." Eddie laughs and remarks, "Okay, a restaurant with food. That's a good start." Paula, knowing Kathy well, knows Kathy is up to something. Mark interjects, "She's answering questions like Akinmola." Paula comments, "You got that right." Kathy asks the group, "Can we just ride there and look first?" Trying to get the name of the restaurant, Eddie asks, "Ride where?" Kathy replies, "To the restaurant." It is clear that Kathy, for some reason, is not going to tell them the name of the restaurant. So, they all ride a few blocks to search for the mystery eatery. When they arrive at the restaurant, Kathy announces, "Here it is. Lulu's Bra and Grill." Paula questions her, asking, "Bra and Grill? Not Bar and Grill?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. Bra and Grill. There's the sign." Sure enough, the sign reads Lulu's Bra and Grill. Kathy asks, "Is this okay, or do we want to look for somewhere else?" Paula replies, "This is okay. But I wonder why they call it the Bra and Grill. This should be like really interesting." Mark mentions, "Let's go for it." They walk in, and they are told by the waitress to sit anywhere, inside or outside. Kathy leads the way, finding a seat under a large covered patio. Everyone looks around, and Paula mentions, "Well, now I can clearly see why they call this the Bra and Grill." Eddie remarks to Kathy, "And now I know why you were doing all that Akinmola talk back there." Hanging from the patio ceiling and the posts are almost 100 bras as decoration. Mark, looking at all the bras, comments, "Wow. No two of them look alike." Eddie comments, "You know how women are. They can't be caught wearing the same dress. Why would bras be any different?" Paula remarks, "Bras are different." Mark replies, "That's exactly my point. They are all different. I'm glad you agree." Paula tells Mark, "That's not what I meant, and you know it." Kathy tells Paula, "Now, you're sounding like Mr. Crumb." Paula comments, "Moving right along." Paula does not want to be accused of sounding anything like Mr. Crumb. The waitress, interrupting their conversation about bras, comes to take their order. Kathy asks her, "Is the shrimp caught daily?" "The boat captain told us it is." The waitress tells her, "It sure is. We got our delivery this morning." Kathy decides to get shrimp, which she likes, but rarely gets. She could always get shrimp scampi at the pizzeria, but she, for some reason, always gets pizza instead. Everyone follows suit, also getting a shrimp dish. Before the waitress leaves, Mark asks, "So, do you hear a lot of bra jokes?" The waitress replies, "Nearly every day. I think I've heard them all, and then some." Paula asks the waitress, "What's your favorite one?" The waitress tells her, "It's not really a joke, and it's actually kind of stupid." Paula tells her, "Tell us anyway." The waitress replies, "Well, this is a restaurant, so the best one that I've ever heard is, if your cup is only half full, you probably need a smaller bra." Kathy finds that particularly funny, but it takes a moment to register with the guys. After their wonderful lunch, they find a place to lock up their bicycles and walk up and down the main road. They find shops along the road ranging from clothing to jewelry stores, and a few dessert shops. Each shop is quite unique. They go into a few of them to check out what's inside. There are also many eateries in and around the downtown village. They'd have to stay for more than a week to eat at them all. While in one of the shops, Eddie hears a song that he likes. The song Eddie hears sounds like a reggae version of Angel of the Morning. While Kathy and Paula are browsing through the shop, Eddie asks the cashier, "Hey, do you know who does that song that's playing?" The cashier listens and tells Eddie, "Yeah. That's Angel. It's done by Shaggy, with a Jamaican reggae artist." Eddie asks the cashier, "Can you please write that down for me? I'll forget it." The cashier replies, "Sure," and writes it on one of the store's business cards for Eddie. Eddie thanks the cashier and places the card in his pocket. He then rejoins Kathy, who has finished looking around this particular store. They hang around the downtown area for a while and then head back to the portal. Heading back to their time and place, they have the whole day ahead of them. Before they ride home, Eddie asks Kathy, "Can we make a side trip?" Kathy asks, "How do you mean?" Eddie replies, "I heard a song I want to get. I want to go to the record shop 30 years into the future and get it." Kathy replies, "Sure. We can do that. What song is it?" Eddie takes out the card, looks at it, and tells Kathy, "Angel by Shaggy." Kathy mentions, "I've never heard it." Eddie assures her, "Yeah, you have. It was playing when we were in one of the shops." They re-enter the portal, traveling to a time 30 years into the future. Arriving at the record shop, Eddie asks the clerk, "Hey, do you have Angel by Shaggy? I need it in the vinyl 45. The clerk replies, "Yeah, I definitely have that. For some reason, that's been selling a lot this summer." The clerk returns with the record, a 45 vinyl single. They check out at the counter and head back again to their time. This time, it's Eddie who's taking a piece of the future back with him. Since they didn't get to go to the beach during their trip, they all decide to head to the pool and get a workout in. After all, McCutcheon could be running down the beach barefoot with his track buddies, dodging pieces of glass and jellyfish tentacles. Or, perhaps McCutcheon is sitting home, worrying about what other dangers are lurking on the beach. Mark likely scared McCutcheon and his buddies out of running on the beach ever again. But, to stay ahead of the competition, they all head back to their houses to get their swimsuits and towels. Paula volunteered to pick everyone up at their homes and drive to the pool. Paula is certainly enjoying being the beach girl. When they get home from the pool, Kathy gets her diary of portal locations that she is keeping. Eddie asks, "Hey, while you're doing that, can we listen to my song?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. I want to hear it too." Kathy plays the song Eddie brought back as she begins to work on her map and secrets of Amelia Island. Eddie sits back on the sofa and listens to his song. While they are listening to Angel, Kathy draws a map of Amelia Island, making note of the vague location of the portal. Drawing a picture of a boat, she marks the location of the marina where they took their boat ride. And for Lulu's bra and grill, she draws a picture of a bra and a grill. Kathy, who is getting very artistic, doesn't use any words, just drawings reminding her of what they all did when they were there. While she is drawing her map, Kathy tells Eddie, "That is a really interesting version of that song. I love it." Eddie replies, "When I heard it while we were in one of the shops, I had the cashier write the name down for me." Kathy plays the song again. This time they sit back and listen to it more carefully. As Kathy continues to draw in her diary, Eddie notices something interesting. Eddie discovers that the bass line of Angel is the same as the song The Joker by the Steve Miller Band. Eddie also notices that the melody is that of the Merrily Rush song, Angel of the Morning. Kathy really likes the reggae style of the song. So does Eddie, which is why he wanted to buy a copy. When she is done, Kathy plays the song a third time, and this time, they get up and dance to Eddie's song. When the song is over, they then head out back to Kathy's pool and relax for a while. The next week, Paula decides to check back with Vinny to see if her hood is finished yet. After all, no beach patrol jeep could possibly be complete without a golden sun painted on the hood. She drives into Vinny's shop and walks into the office. Vinny hears the door chime and comes out of the shop to meet the jeep girl. Seeing Paula, Vinny says, "Hey, it's the jeep girl. I got your hood all finished. You're going to love it. Come on back, and we'll take a look at it." They walk back to the shop, and Vinny shows her the hood. Paula exclaims, "Wow, that's so awesome. That's a whole lot better than I ever expected. It's beautiful." Paula's new Jeep hood has a deep golden yellow sun painted in the center, with curvy rays coming out of it, just like she wanted. Vinny airbrushed the sun, so there are varying shades of yellow throughout the design. Vinny tells Paula, "I used metallic paint, so it will reflect nicely in the sunlight." Paula is intrigued by Vinny's artwork. She keeps telling him, "It's so beautiful." Vinny tells Paula, "Give me your keys. I'll get Anthony to put it on." Paula questions Vinny, telling him, "I didn't know you were going to put it on too." Vinny tells her, "It will only take 15 minutes. I'd hate for something to happen to it." Paula gives Vinny her keys, and he drives her CJ into the shop where Anthony installs the new hood. Paula pays Vinny for the job, then watches as Vinny goes into the shop to help Anthony. 20 minutes later, Vinny drives the Jeep out of the shop and parks in the front parking lot, making sure the Jeep is in the sun. Vinny tells Paula, "Take a look at what it looks like in the sun." Paula, seeing the reflective golden sun on her hood, exclaims, "Wow. That's really something. It's awesome. The metallic paint really makes a statement." Vinny and Paula both stand back and take a look at her Jeep. The doors say, "Beach Patrol." There is now a golden sun on the hood. And there is the decorative, "Beach Girl" plate on the front. Vinny tells Paula, "Your Jeep is really looking nice." Paula replies, "Yeah, I'd say. That is so awesome." Vinny tells Paula, "If you want, I could paint a smaller version of the sun on the doors, in the center of the Beach Patrol logo." Paula replies, "Really? The same sun?" Vinny tells her, "Yeah. But you'd have to leave your doors here for a few days." Paula tells him, "That would look really cool. I'll have to find a time when I won't need my doors for a week." Vinny tells Paula, "Take a good picture of the sun on the hood before you bring the doors in, and get it blown up to 8x10 for me. This way, I can get the sun just right." Paula tells Vinny, "Yeah. We're doing that next." Paula thanks Vinny again, and drives away in her CJ, looking more like the official beach patrol than before. Paula gets home and wastes no time taking the picture of the newly painted sun on the hood. Wanting her Jeep finished before school starts, she only has a few weeks to get this project done. She couldn't get a straight-on shot with the camera, so she parks her Jeep under her second-story bedroom window over the garage. Looking down at the hood, she takes a few pictures through the open window. Removing the half-exposed roll of film, Paula drives to the camera shop to get her film processed. Paula saw how fast Angelo, Vinny, and Rocky effortlessly got things done. She has just figured out that, to get something done, you have to get moving, and get moving fast. Sitting around and waiting for something to happen just doesn't work. Eddie has his MGB all finished. All of the minor details have been finished, and the car is deemed completed, at least for now. Knowing Eddie, the MGB will never be technically finished. There is always something that can be improved or modified. But, for now, it's as finished as it's going to get. Well, except for the decorative plate he is working on for the front bumper. Seeing Paula's decorative Beach Girl plate, which was made by Vinny, motivated Eddie to make his own decoration for his front bumper. Eddie's plate, however, will not say Beach Girl, it will have the words Eddie, the mechanic on it, letting everyone know who is behind the wheel. He's also thinking of an idea for a decorative plate for Kathy's Porsche. He doesn't have the final plan yet, but he's getting close. Eddie and Kathy spend most of the latter half of the summer working out and swimming at the pool. Eddie is not about to let Tessa beat him next year in the rematch. Eddie, Mark, and the rest of the track team have significantly raised the bar in track and field competition. If the other teams are to be competitive, they cannot allow their runners to sit on their bottoms all summer long. Seeing McCutcheon and his team members running at the beach is only the tip of the iceberg. The other teams have got the message and are acting on it. Kathy, with her scholarship, or bodyship as she calls it, must stay in top shape since she is now on the college track team. Eddie must also stay in top shape. Eddie reasons to himself that, if he wants to run faster, running against resistance should be a good way to train. But, running against resistance poses a bit of a problem. Unless you are running into a 30 or 40 mile per hour wind, it is difficult to find a good way to run against resistance. Eddie could run up hills, but he has found running up hills is not quite the same as running on level ground. Running up hills is a great quadriceps workout, but Eddie wants to focus on working the muscles he uses when sprinting on level ground. Taking a trip to the hardware store, Eddie grabs a few pieces of steel angle iron and a few nuts, bolts, and washers. He also picks up a thick rope and a few D-rings. He asks the clerk if they have a shoulder harness. The clerk points out a harness that is used for climbing a roof using a safety cable. Eddie goes ahead and adds the harness to his items, checks out at the counter, and heads home. Spending 2 hours, Eddie builds a sled that he can weigh down heavily with his weights. Eddie designed the sled with some steel cross members that will increase the drag when it is pulled across the ground. A short vertical piece of angle iron will hold the weights. He attaches the sled to the rope and the rope to the harness. Eddie's thinking is to take the sled and harness apparatus to the beach or the sand track at the university. Wearing the harness, he would drag the weighted sled in the sand as he runs. This would provide a good amount of resistance. Since Eddie now has a car, he can get around more easily. The ride to the beach is not only a lot faster, but Eddie can carry a lot more stuff to the beach, including the training sled he just built. Carrying such a piece of equipment on his bicycle is pretty much an impossibility, even for Eddie. Eddie loads up his car with the sled and 50 pounds of weights from his barbell set. He then heads to the sand track at the university, since it is a little closer than the beach. Arriving at the university, Eddie unloads his new invention, which he named Eddie's training sled for now. Setting up his new invention on the sand track, Eddie starts with 25 pounds of weight on the sled. He puts on the harness and tries sprinting for about 100 yards. At the end of the 100 yards, Eddie knows, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that he is onto something. After taking a short break, Eddie sprints back to the starting line. Raising the weight to 50 pounds, Eddie sprints for another 100 yards. After another break, Eddie sprints back to the starting point. Making a few more runs, Eddie can definitely feel that he is getting an awesome workout. Having a good workout, Eddie loads his invention back into his trunk and heads back home. On the way, he stops at the hardware store to pick up more steel and a few more nuts, bolts, and washers. When he arrives home, he adds additional steel cross members on the bottom of the sled to increase the drag in the sand. Eddie reasons that, if he can increase the drag of the sled, he can use less weight. Once he has the design perfected, he'll take it down to Angelo's service station and have Angelo weld it together. Over the next few weeks, Eddie will perfect his training sled, thereby perfecting his training.